Bonnie County, everyone. This is Professor Amin Ra, California State University of Long Beach, Professor Emeritus, Africana Studies Department, who will hopefully will be joined later in the show by historian Joe Hembrick. This is the Conscious Corner. We want to thank Rashiki Mascani for providing us this platform under the Educational Community Network. And we're here every Monday and Wednesday to give nothing but facts about Black, to give you a checkup from the neck up, give you an understanding and overstanding of the needs, concerns, and issues and solutions to the Black experience and the Black challenges that we face. So at this time, we want to get started by first of all saying things that we think that were good or things that shows us on the front line struggling. So what's going on, Linda, in Florida?
A lot of things are going on. We're living and keep moving forward, just trying to keep things going.
Okay. But you were offered a position to be a curator of a museum.
It's coming.
Tell us about the museum and what kind of museum. Because it was very dynamic when you explained it to me. Yeah.
You put me on the spot like that, but it's in Punta Gorda, Florida. And you see, I'm just all, because we're in the works of it right now. But it's a predominantly black city in Florida that's undiscovered. And there is a museum there and of all type of things that's going on. And yes, and he is correct, because I have been offered a position, but we're in the works of talking now, trying to discuss all the details of it. But I have to discuss that at a later time when I know more, when I meet with them this Friday.
But what kind of museum is it?
It's a Black History Museum surrounded by the city of Punta Gorda, and how it was founded. In fact, it was founded probably about 75 years ago or more. And the thing about it, there were only five blacks that have helped incorporate the city. And I'm thankful of one of my cousins. Her great grandmother was one of the original founders. And so what they've done is she's passed on, and her granddaughter or great-granddaughter, who is my second or third cousin, they have taken all the history of this museum, of this city, and they've tried to put artifacts and gather every information, everything they can about the city of Punta Gorda, Florida. And one of my other cousins, he's a commissioner there. So they've created a museum out of a house that's been standing now for the last 50-odd years. And she's ready to retire. And again, I'm learning more and more about it when I sit down with them, actually face-to-face this weekend, so I can learn more and talk more intelligently about it. So he did put me on the spot. But the next time I will have more information.
That's good what you gave us. Brother Mashinda, what's going on in Louisiana?
Well, I'm happy to report, where I'm at here in a little town. They got their first Black mayor, actually the first Black male. The current mayor who's going out is half Black, but she kind of don't qualify with the Black, so to speak. She was raised by a white grandma, and so she's kind of she's a sister, so I can't take that away from her, but she don't really recognize that. At least a lot of people feel that she doesn't. But anyway, the brother that just won, he put her out of business, won 2-1 in the election. 23-year-old brother, sharp brother, ran in the election. Nobody thought he had a chance. And black, you know, we got, you know, black folks got behind him, and he went in there. Like I say, he beat two other folks, two white people that were, he beat them by himself combined. They had, you know, their total combined, he beat them like a landslide. And anyway, they're getting ready to, you know, have a little small little inauguration for him. And he's already asking the police chief to resign because there was some foul play in a matter of fact, it was one of my students, previous students who got, who died in the custody of the police. And so they're investigating it. And the reason, you know, it wasn't like, you know, his, you know, he's saying, make him resign just because he's coming in there, he want a clean house. He was talking about trying to work with, you know, the current administrations or the current cabinets and that type of thing. But a video came out where, you know, they showed some faulty business with the police and this particular guy that they had, his brother that they had in custody. And he was like dead on arrival at the police station. You know, there's something about a taser gun. And he had breathing issues and things like that. So there's some details, and they're trying to work that out now. But there's a full investigation going on, and the NAACP is involved, and so forth. But anyway, so the young brother, 23 years old, he was president at when he was in college. He just got out of college, actually, and he was a you know student body president, student government president for the you know at Washington University in St. Louis, and you know, which has 15,000 students, and he's involved in. I think he works with the Urban League. He's like a policy consultant with the Urban League. So anyway, you got a young brother that's doing some things, and so
what's
anyway,
his name
that's
again? What's his name?
His name is Tyron Truong, Truong. Now he. That's a like a Vietnamese last name, because I think his grandfather or somebody, you know, kind of raised him or something, and he's a you know Vietnamese guy, but you know his mama, daddy, they black, you know that kind of thing. And he's a brother.
His name is Tyron.
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 Tyrin. Yeah. Truong. And so.
And how many people in that city?
Between 11,000 and 12,000.
Okay.
And so, like I say, he governed 15,000 students over there at the university. So,
I'm sorry, can you repeat the city again?
Bogalusa, Louisiana.
That's good.
Yeah, that's, you know, this is the home of the Deacons of Defense and Justice.
Yeah, Robert Williams.
That's right. I got a lot of family members that were prominent in that fight, especially back when the Klan was really acting up in the early 60s, mid 60s, late
60s. We had him and his wife at the Culture Center.
Right.
Before he retreated to North Carolina somewhere and then made his transition.
Right. And that, yeah, that actually started, was it Alabama? Or, I think that was out of Alabama, but the Bogalusa chapter, you know, they took the ball and ran with, you know, it's more of a dual effort. They established their own chapter, and they have a movie behind it, you know, very powerful, you know.
Yeah.
And that said is Bogalusa. Yeah.
All right, well, that's a good report. Anything else?
Let's see. You think of anything? No, not at this time. I'll have to think about it. I may interject a little bit.
Arashi Key.
Yes, I came across this video through brother Barry. Mm-hmm. He sent me this video yesterday, and I wanted to share it with you all. I'm just gonna share it. I'm not gonna play it. I just want to share. Let me share it. And tell you guys, you guys may have heard of this brother right here. This is Brother Cornell X, and he's a phenomenal story you know, teller, not fiction, a true story. And he was basically, this interview was about his life. And I think he's currently, if I'm not mistaken, he's the leader of the new Black Panther Party. And Dr. Khaled had asked him to take over, you know, in his absence, you know. And so I think he's the leader. I think, Rod, you may be familiar with him, Cornell X.
Yeah, but it was another brother, attorney. He went to Inglewood High. I can't think of his name right now. He was the leader for a little while of the new Black Panther Party. And he came out, we had him as a guest speaker at Cal State Long Beach, but he went to Inglewood High, and he's an attorney in Washington, D.C. But I'd like to, I'm going to listen to Quanell X and see when did he become the head of the new Black Panther Party. Maybe it's been, you know, maybe he was the head of the new Black Panther Party, one of the chapters. But the national leader was, I'll get his name. I can't think of it right now.
Yeah, because I know he had a good relationship with Khaled Muhammad.
Yeah, well, this brother here was Khaled's right-hand man, the brother I'm talking about. I mean, and you know, we all work close with Khaled. I got plenty of videos, plenty of pictures with Khaled. And we had him at Cal State Long Beach. He used to be the keynote speaker every Saturday. We had a three-day conference. And for the first 5 years of the conference, he would close out on Friday, on Saturday night, and it was always packed.
I got a chance to see him. Yeah, at Long Beach State at the Consciousness Conference.
Yeah,
and he was excellent. And so this brother right here, I encourage everybody to check this interview out. He was very candid about his life. And he spoke of things that most people wouldn't tell about their life. So it's an excellent video, and I encourage everybody to see it. And I'll send that one to you, Ra, and anybody else that's interested. So very, very a good story for reform, you know, being a former, you know, person that lived the life of you know, negativity. And I encourage you guys to listen to it, because you could see why he became a Muslim. He was in the Nation of Islam and all of that. So excellent, excellent video. But that's what I wanted to share this evening.
Okay, then, you know, we need it, because still movies coming out, a lot of good things is going on, you know. So let me see. Just a few things. I mean, there's so many things going on that's beautiful. And
Professor Ra.
Yeah.
We got a Sister Make It Happen is here.
All right. Okay, Sister.
Greetings, Hotep.
How you doing, Dr. Shabazz? We were just having discussions about good things, our frontline things that Black people have participated in, and making notation of it. Brother Mashinda talked about this brother that's just got elected mayor in Bukalusa, Louisiana, young brother, 11, of a city of 11,000. And, you know, he's the first Black male to be elected. And that means the people showed up, came out. And that's an example of, you know, empowering Black people in the Euro-American electoral system. And Brother Mashinda was just, you know, explaining who this brother was. And his name was Tyrese Trump. And help me, Brother Mashinda, if I'm wrong. Tyrese Strong or Tyrese Strong. And Tyrese Trump. And he was just a very unique and very excellent accomplishment based on struggle. You know, to get people to vote for you ain't easy. And the first thing he did was ask the police chief to resign because there was a brother that was mistreated by the police department that they tried to cover up. And so that's a good example of what type of leader he's going to be with regards to dealing with police abuse. And probably if you deal with police abuse, you'll deal with any form of abuse of Black people by the state of Louisiana or by the county that the city's in. So we appreciate that. And so Linda was telling us about this museum in this small Black town that they asked her to consider being a curator or director of the museum when the lady retired. And it's one that deals with Black history. And so we was happy about that. And Rasha Key was just telling us about this brother who is head of the new Black Panther Party. And so that's a beautiful thing that we're looking at. He has a video that he'll send out. He said he's going to send it out. He got it. He probably somebody sent it to him. He's going to send it to, I hope, every one of us that's on the air to look at so we can discuss it maybe later. Now it's your turn, Dr. Shabazz. Any good news about Black people or any frontline information of achievements that Black people have been through?
Well, I think we're always doing some great things, but let me see where I'm at and what my awareness is and what's going on around me, because you got to be aware of what's happening around you and plugged in to know kind of what's good. So I had this thought about a couple of things that I just lost my train of thought. So I think that I'm going to have to think a little bit more and come back because, okay, I got it now. It's right here local in the city of Compton. It's the airport, the Compton Airport. There's a couple of things happening with the Black Aviators, the Association of Black Aviators. I have, connections there, and they have an offshoot, a younger millennial group of that organization. And I think they call themselves the Young Aviators or something to that effect. But anyway, they're doing some great work over in Compton, and they're really trying to rally the youth in the community and really trying to get this information out about the program and who they are into the community. So what I like to do is try to connect the organization with us so perhaps they can come in and share all the great exciting things they're doing at the airport. I don't know if any of the members here have any, knowledge or have seen what's been going over at the airport.
Yeah, there's a lot of great things going on over there. Not only teaching young people how to fly, and one of them was on television. It had one young man fly from here to New York and back or something. I think he was 12 or 13 or something like that. And then they also teaching them how to work on planes and teaching them, the whole scope of aviation, the technology that goes into it, and holding classes and tutoring. And but see, the airport really, it's called the Compton Airport, but it's owned by the county of Los Angeles. Yeah, and they were trying to put a restaurant on the facility. And there was a guy, he really worked hard with young people, young females and males. I think the next one was a young lady that flew a long ways and back. And we'll get his name. He got a lot of recognition for his work in at the Compton Airport, so that's a good thing. And Asante for bringing that up. Because that's positive. Whenever you develop an incentive for young people to study, an incentive that motivate young people to dare do just great things and think big and think that they can do it. I mean, very few kids want to fly or want to get in a plane and fly it. Very few people want to get in a plane and just travel in it, but they do, and that's a good thing. Sante for bringing that up.
You're
Okay.
welcome. I'm going to send a text message to one of their elders to see if I can get him to pop on either tonight with us or perhaps connect them with them so they could talk about what they're doing.
Yeah, the city gave him a bunch of grants to do a lot of things.
Hey,
Thank you.
Professor Ra.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead,
No,
just
go
to
ahead.
make it happen.
No, I just said thank you very much. And thank you for acknowledging me. Thank you.
So, Professor Ra, I have a classmate that's a doctor. He may be retired, but he's a medical doctor, and he's also a pilot. So I think I have a way to contact him, and so we can probably get him on to talk about his experiences. You know, he was a class 83 out of Compton High School, so he's a pilot and also a medical doctor.
Compton was considered what they call the hub city, because it was in the middle between both ports, and the airport and all of that had access, and so they called it the hub city. And it had an airport in the city of Compton, a 3-park golf course. At one time, they had two hospitals, Dominguez Hospital off Susanna Road. They had a college, Compton Community College. At that time, it was called Compton City College when it got started. And then it used to be on the campus of Compton High. And then they got their own campus. And then they had, as I said, the hospital. One was Dominguez Hospital, and the other one was Bandera. That was on Compton Boulevard in Wilmington. There's the apartment complexes there now. Compton, that just had all these amenities because it was a suburb, classified as a suburb. At that time it was close to 80%, 85 to 95% of all white. And then blacks started moving from Watts to Compton. And then they had this big housing thing where blacks in the 70s could get houses without money down and all that to stimulate the war on poverty. And a lot of black people bought houses in East Compton. Whites moved out. But the point is that's how the city is. It's one of the most, it had just thoroughfare streets that just ran. Artesia, Alondra, Rosecrans. Alondra and Rosecrans take you all the way to the beach, Imperial Highway. 120th take you all the way up to Weston and then reconnect on the other side. So it's a very beautiful city. And it has some beautiful homes, just like in Watts. People don't know in Watts, they got some beautiful homes over there off 103rd, 102nd. In Central and going west, excellent housing. Most people just think Watts is just Imperial Court, Jordan Downs, Nickerson Gardens, because it housed the three public housing. We're right in the considered Watts, Imperial Highway. I mean Imperial Court, Jordan Downs, as they called it, and Nickerson Gardens. And they were predominantly black people from the South who were occupying them because they were what you call a public housing. And those bricks were so thick, they sustained all the earthquakes. And they're still standing, except for some of them they're tearing down and converting into condos and people can buy them. So anyway, that's good. Let me just go over a few things. First of all, there's been a lot of progress on the front line in the electoral midterms. Black people turned out by the droves in major cities. First, let's start with Arizona, where they defeated election deniers in all three major positions. The city clerk, or the Secretary of State, Secretary of State of Arizona, who runs the elections. Most people don't know how important that position is. Second, they had governor who won, and then they had the state United States Senator from Arizona reconfirmed and won. Those were major victories, along with the victory in Nevada, gave the Democrats the power to have 50 senators, which means the vice president makes a decision if there's a tie between both the Republicans and the blacks in the United States Senate. They didn't do it in the House. They lost the House only by a little bit. But at the same time, they did win the most powerful places, the senator, because they 6-year terms and they're elected statewide. And so the Native Americans and blacks and Latinos really did the job in Nevada, electing a United States Senator. They didn't elect the governor back because of COVID, they say, and he shut down the casinos and stuff. So they put up a lot of money to get him out of office. But black people did turn out, and they did elect a United States Senator. Now, this election in Alabama that will be done in on December 6th with Warnock and Herschel Walker would give the Democrats 51 senators, and they wouldn't need the vice president to come in and settle a vote when they on the issues that the majority rule. Then they have a thing called a filibuster, and that you need at least 11 votes to pass things. But there are a lot of things they can do if Warnock beats Herschel Walker. Black people turned out in Georgia. They did a good job. Male, female, young people, especially from the black colleges, they really turned out and put foots on the ground. They couldn't get Stacey Abrams the governorship. She lost by over 100,000 votes, but they did get Warnock, who beat Herschel Walker by 37,000. They have a runoff. The history of the runoff in Georgia was designed for no black person to ever hold a statewide office. That's why they started it, because blacks had moving, and they saw the demographics changing. So they passed a law that, you know, if you don't get 50% of the vote plus one, you have to go to a runoff. And that's when the whites knew that they could keep it white, because they vote regularly, whereas a lot of African Americans at that time only voted one time. That was in the general election, but the runoffs, they didn't come back that strong. So anyway, Warnock is in this race with Herschel Walker, former football NFL superstar, and I don't know if he played baseball. He did something else, track or something, and he he can't count the two without Milkstick. And Donald Trump chose him to run to split the black vote. And we're hopeful that Warnock will win a full term. He the one he won in 2020 in 20 was the fulfill the last 2 years of a senator that resigned. This was the, now you got this is this is unique. The whole purpose of two blacks running against each other in a state where blacks never ran for statewide offices. And Warnock would be, if he wins this, you'd be making history again because this is the second time he won statewide. And that means that progressives, white Democrats and blacks put him in office along with other people of color, which is very rude. This allowed the Democrats to make appointments to judges and dominate the committees that approve it. When it was 50-50, it was a struggle. They wouldn't pass or approve a lot of the nominees for court and special commissions, and it was just hard to move. But if they get this 51, they'll be able to move. Second, if the Congress decides to impeach Biden or any other public officers, the Senate has to confirm it. And that's what happened to Trump. Congress convicted him or impeached him, but the Senate would not confirm the conviction. I mean the impeachment. So therefore, he's impeached, but he didn't lose his office. He didn't lose because of the Senate. So the Senate can block a lot of the stuff Congress do. Congress can block a lot of the bills that the Senate do. The other issue is that Karen Bass won the mayorship of Los Angeles. She beat this guy Caruso, who spent over $100 million of his own money. He's a billionaire. And he had ads attacking her and attacking her. But she ended up defeating him despite his money because she had over 300 volunteers walking the streets. And she had a reputation of being just a beautiful, being a beautiful politician. She was a former Congress lady that worked on gun reform and law justice reform with Tim Scott, who ended up blocking the legislation that they had put together, or bagging out on it. But this was a victory. First of all, being the first black woman ever elected mayor in the city of Los Angeles. And then she beat the money, but she galvanized the masses of people to support her, winning by almost a landslide, ran away with it. Most people thought that she got, he was hitting her so hard that she didn't have a chance. But we're proud of that. But not only that, in the four major cities, we have black mayor. We have Eric Adams in New York. We have Lori Lightfoot in Chicago. And we have Sylvester Turner in Houston. Aside from a lot of mayors in small cities, and these are people that they brought over here and put in enslavement for 100 years. And politicians affirmed it and said it was legal. Supreme Court validated. They had laws saying that if you help an enslaved person to escape, you can go to prison. face punishment. So now they're holding office. It's like when we was coming up, there was no black quarterback. You know, Shaq Harris out of Grambling was one of the first, along with Joe Ferguson, who played for Pittsburgh. They called him Broadway Joe. Shaq Harris, and not only are they black quarterbacks, but they're changing the role of a quarterback. Quarterback is like another halfback that runs with the ball and throws the ball, you know, and it's like what Jimmy the Greek said. They're taking all the jobs from the white people, you know, ownership, Rashki, ownership, and you know, at one time black people on the football field could not be a center, a middle halfback, a middle linebacker, or a quarterback, because those are the people that handled the balls, or those were the leaders that called the plays. Now the greatest linebackers, some of the greatest quarterbacks are all black, are people of color. And so we want to congratulate them for that. But getting back to these four mayors, and as Mashinda was saying, there's a whole bunch of mayors in those small towns also. And they turn it out. They do a good job, despite the tax that they get. The other thing is Kyrie, this issue with Kyrie and how they're coming after him. Today he went by, I think it was Sister Clara Muhammad School, and the oldest black Muslim school in New York, and took pictures and gave them 60 grand right there on the spot, 60,000. So we thank him for that. We're going to thank the people that, you know, dealing with in Buffalo, black people in Buffalo. To withstand Mother Nature, the weather's so bad, it's deep. So anyway, those are some of the things that I had for the front line, and I thought it was very, very important. And we had brother from Chicago, brother, what Tommy, what's his name, Roger King?
I could look his name up. I know his first name is Charles.
The brother that we had on Wednesday?
On Wednesday, yeah. Brother name is Charles.
Oh, yeah. I know his last name. I mean, relative to Jerome Pratt. He said they worked 22 years to get this street named after Malcolm X, and they finally won it, and that they're going to have a big celebration for Malcolm X Drive, and they had his daughters out there, and they just did a great job. And that's what we're talking about. As long as you're struggling, you win it. As long as you're struggling, you're not defeated. And that's the beautiful thing about us as a people, is our endurance and our commitment to human and social justice. We're the vanguard of morals and values of this system. They used to refer to the Black Caucus as the conscience of the Congress, because they raise up so many beautiful issues about just humanity. They gave the Congress a sense of humanity. And these struggles that a lot of people don't get a lot of news about are very important victories, because we are people that, you know, the first thing they say when you come out is, no. No matter what it is, no. And then you get a chance to ask them what you want. But soon as you show up, it's no. And we want to thank these brothers and sisters, and Gary, where the Jackson Fives is from, where Mayor Hatcher, one of the first black mayors of a major city, along with Carl Stokes in Cleveland, I think it was. Or may have been St. Louis, I can't remember.
So Professor Rod, so you talking about Quabbinah?
Yeah, Quabbinah.
Okay, I thought you was talking about the guy he invited on.
No, Quabbinah.
Okay.
And so
And doc, and
he's a psychologist, the guy he brought on.
Yeah. Dr. Shabazz have her hand up.
Yes, Dr. Shabazz, go ahead.
I just appreciate y'all with y'all forecasting of my future. So thank you so much. And I appreciate the love and respect. But when we talk about the front line and we talk about some news, I meant to even bring this up last week. Just been so much going on in my personal life, just life really kind of unfolding on many levels. But there was an elder who in our community who recently passed away that I wanted to share with the Community Education Network. And it was a sister warrior from the Eagle Wings of Enlightenment Center. So I don't know if anybody is aware of that. She was referred to at the time of her transition as Mataji. I have a Sentinel article that they did on her that I'm trying to pull up right now so we can kind of see who she is. Brother Rasaki, can you maybe give me rights to share and then I can try to pull this up?
Got it.
Let me see. All right, give me 1 second. But she's been doing the work in the community for many, many years. Elder of mine, someone, many elder to many. And so I just wanted to make sure that I share this in this group because I'm sure that our circles have crossed her path at some point in time. So I don't know if I'm sharing my screen or not now. Can you all see that yet?
No.
Nothing. Okay, so let me get back to here and then let me share my screen. And how about that?
Yes.
Okay, so the article says Shreve Natadevi Pramanana Mataji transitions on November 12th. So when I made acquaintance with this lovely soul, I met her as White Eagle at the Eagle Wings of Enlightenment Center. She's evolved into this here, and but has a great article they did on her and all the work that she's been doing in the community to serve who she is. And so I just wanted to make sure that we got a chance to see her and maybe reference the article and a homage to her and the service that she's done in the community. So that's what I wanted to share. Thank you.
Okay. Well, that's good. But tell us a little bit more about the the Eagle Wings of Enlightenment. Do they say what they do?
Yeah. So she's a spiritual leader. It says she's the founder of Eagle Wings and Enlightenment Center, LA-based center dedicated to world peace and nonviolence. Under her loving guidance, the center grew from humble beginnings to one that drew people from all over the world who came for blessings, healings, and to offer prayer of world peace. It says, Shreve Natadevi Pramanana, a respected spiritual teacher who selflessly served for 37 years as a beacon of light in South Los Angeles and the world, transitioned peacefully on November 12th. Gives her viewing information, but then it says, you know, she's from Louisiana. You know, some of her religious upbringing. She's a spiritual leader, so talks about who she came in contact with. Her dad was a civil rights leader also in Louisiana, you know, talked about her parents' love for Jesus Christ and, you know, her mission there, the work that she's done at Joshua Tree to creating a sanctuary, her travels all over the world, from Africa to France, Italy, Botswana, just different places. And so for me personally, she's really helped my family and me to evolve over the years. I've been involved with the center probably 25 of those 37 years. And, you know, just wanted to share it with the group. And like I said, some of you may know of her or some of your folks may know of her, but now we all know. And now we're all.
I got a question for the whole group. There's always a question of that. The European taught us, as Malcolm said, to hate ourselves and to not get along with each other. Some Black people feel that that's an issue. And they say, you know, the person that broke in my car was Black. The person that broke in my house was Black. You know, you can't, you know, there's a lot of that going on. And then there's Black men and Black women that marry whites. And that offends black people. What do you think we can do to improve relationships? Or what did you think some black people do that hurt relationships with each other? I mean, like Donna Hathaway, them the same way as the love. You know, I mean, what happened to the love? And did we lose that love and feeling? And, you know, now it's gone, gone, gone. Right, so say. So what do you think that we, how do we, what are some of the things you think we can do to improve our relationships with each other? One measure of people loving each other, getting along with each other, is the ability to work together and to build families together. That's the hallmark of measurement of relationship. But there's also others. But Linda, did you have any ideas?
Oh, no, I was just going to say what you said, except also add communication in there, too. That's the key.
When you say communication, what do you mean?
No, I was just trying to elaborate on what you were saying, and saying was, can we add communication in there? Because that's the key to it. And if sister's making it happen, can you please help me out with this one? See, that's how you have to do it. Yes, I can say communication.
I got your back, sis. I got your back. What you need?
Yeah, yes. He's asking about communication. How he wants me to elaborate. How do we communicate in order to have effective relationships, a better relationships? Am I correct?
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about as you asked the question and how, you know, I'm in a relationship. I've been in a relationship over, you know, 20 years, 24 years. So kind of, you know, how does that work, right? So, yeah, you got to constantly evolve. Everybody has to constantly evolve because let me be a little more clear. Evolution is happening. You're growing, you're changing. Whether you accept it or aware of it, you are not the same. You will forever change. And so therefore, sometimes that change creates a loss or a grief, and we don't want to change. You know, but you can't help it. There's no way out of life alive. And so therefore, you got to change. You're going to change. You're just rolling up, rolling it up. So for me, it's about making sure that you constantly renew yourself, evolve and grow. And you got to communicate. And that's, you know, you got, you know, I'm changing. You're not the same. You're not going to be the same. If you've been together for 30 years, you're not the same person you was when you met that person 30 years ago. And so that constant communication about the change.
Okay, so but are there any other things you think we can do besides just evolving into maturity and a sense of us, you know, being positive to maintain strong relationships, not only with people that you're married to, but to each other as a people? I mean, when we went to the Million Man March, the Nation of Islam had black men sign a pledge that they weren't going to do this, they wouldn't do that, they were going to take care of their children, they wouldn't do domestic violence. There's a bunch of things. We may get that pledge. And then Dr. Karenga wrote the mission statement, what to do when you go back as black men. Then they had the Black Women Million March, and they were given a pledge. And they were given kinds of stand by your man, where deal with him, the difference between a professional woman and a blue collar man, it doesn't matter, you still work together and have a good old relationship. And how do we stop the violence? You know, what's going on now? You got black men getting publicized for mass murders, the one in Virginia. The one at the mall, Walmart, I think, was in Virginia. And then there was one in, I can't remember the other city, but there was two that major shootings. Not the one in Colorado with the Q one, but there was two major murders that Black people participated in, and we wanted to find out, how do we deal with these issues? Because it got to be from the people. Laws ain't gonna do it. Putting people in prison ain't did it. Education helps a little, but are there any other aspects that you think that they should focus on to improve our relationships with each other?
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
Doc, just to make it happen, did you wanted to add to that before I jump in?
I was just saying the spirituality, and then again, the commitment to self. I know that's kind of like a higher order thinking, but you have mental health issues. You have a lot of, you have to get help. People have to be honest and get the help that they need so that they can be the best versions of themselves. And only you can do that. So what if we're in denial and we're not being honest with ourselves, then we have eventually the pressure, you get these pressure bubbles. And this is what you get. So until we are honest with ourselves and we have some level of spirituality that we're committed to a higher self, I just feel like this is kind of how it is. And some will, we're going to have a lot of casualties. I now sound like a Brother Mashinda, I think.
Go ahead, Roger.
Okay, Professor Ra, I think you have mentioned many times before in the past 2 years we've been on here, you can't let your oppressor be your teacher. We have terms like acculturation. We have other terms like, what's that term? We learn in Black studies, dehumanization process. There's a system in place that we all know about called system of white supremacy, racism. And when you going through a process of imitation, learning the ways of people who don't care about you, and then you try to be like them, that's a big problem. So what we should and have to do is educate to become anew versus going with what we have been doing, which is taking on the culture and the personality of our oppressors. So the education process have to be, I use this in the class. I said, delete the old, or delete what delete and upload a new self. We have to get out of the practices of doing things that we've been doing, like Brother Thomas said, doing the same things, expecting a different result. So we have to get under the mental, we have to get out of the mentality of this society that we live in. And like the we have ancient teachings. We talk about chakras and having an understanding of self. I'm a big advocate of Neely Fuller, codes, counter-racist codes, different practices. I tell my students, you are what you practice. So we have to change. We have to, the things that we're doing, bringing information of change to change. You talk about voting a lot, Professor Rob. Yeah, we have to get people out to vote for their interests. So there's many things that we need to be doing that's counter to what we've been doing. Another thing you always talk about, Professor Rod, you was Malcolm in the day and Superfly at night. You were making a transition from the old, your old ways to a new way. So you had to go through the contradictory phase of everything. So now you're there. You're not Superfly anymore. You're more Malcolm. So we have to go through these changes. And I can talk on and on about that. So I'm gonna let Brother Mashinda bring his information to the forefront.
Yo. So, you know, the question was, you know, how do we, you know, better ourselves as humans? I think that's the question I understand. You know, we have a lot of corruption, a lot of strife and negativity, destruction going on the planet. You know, one thing I can say, you know, where I'm at in the South, coming straight out of Compton, you know, I always say from Compton to the cotton field, you know, coming down here, it's like, you know, I had my thoughts when I came down here, you know, preconceived notions. I didn't know, I've been down here before visiting, but when you become a resident, you start learning cultures and subcultures, and learning about people and, you know, learning about rednecks, you know, which was, is very interesting experience. Work with self-professed rednecks every day. I'm not trying to be ugly. Like my mother used to say, if you can't say something nice, you know, say, you know, don't be ugly. I'm not being ugly. It's my experience where someone says, the guy who hired me on my job, where I work at a college, community college, he says, these rednecks don't want anything. He said, how do I know? Because I'm one. What he was referring to, some economic development. You know, they were going to build a reservoir, which the reservoir is going to create water activity, water sports, and activities for families, kind of like building a lake, so to speak. And the people who lived around it didn't want that traffic. A lot of people in the country, they don't want to build up. They don't want to grow. You know, it's a mindset. So do you condemn that, their mindset? They're used to living, a lot of them become intimidated by the big city life. I had, you know, I've lived in the big city life and I've lived in other cities and I'm living down here and not too far from New Orleans, my mother's birthplace, got relatives there. New Orleans is off the chain. Every night you see the news, it's like anywhere else in the urban America, a lot of murders. But anyway, just to stay on track though, it's all about experience. You know, when you become experienced, you know, in life on different subjects, different, you know, different areas of life, you know, cultures, let's stick with cultures. And so learning this redneck, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, he loves me or anything like that. But the dude gave me a job, you know, called me in his office. I had some skill sets and I was referred by another redneck. So, okay. I've been pulled over by the police out here, or the police get behind me back since I've been living down here. When the police get behind me, I don't feel, I'm telling you, you know, I grew up in Compton, going through LA. I was working in the probation department and still was nervous when the police got behind me. But out here, it's like, okay. And I'm not saying it doesn't go on, because it does. There's a lot of stuff that's going on. But what I'm saying is, it's like these preconceived notions that you have about stuff until you witness it or experience it for yourself. And so what I'm saying is, now, I don't have a cure for these relationships that we're talking about with other people. But I do know that I dialogue on a regular basis with some of these rednecks. We're talking about other cultures. And I've had some of them say, hey man, you've opened my eyes to a lot of things. My spirit knows how to detect sincerity. I know when you BSing as well, you know? So, and yeah. So it's like, wow. And then you go to lunch with them. Now, don't get me wrong. Yay. I don't run with them. I'm not at their houses and all that kind of stuff. I've been invited. I've been invited to different places. But, you know, that's not my thing. But what I'm saying is, in my regular dialogue with other people that are self-professed rednecks. And I'm sure their great granddaddies was Klansmen. This is one of the, this pound for pound, this was the biggest Ku Klux Klan stronghold ever, where I'm at right now. Pound for pound, I mean per capita. Big Klan situation, especially in the 60s. They were very active in the 50s, Jim Crow, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, but learning, you know, talking to these offspring and these generations that have come out of that, when they integrated the schools in 1968, 68, that was the last, you had black schools and white schools. And I know in America, we still integrate, segregated in a lot of ways, but I'm talking about by law. By law, you will not go to school with white children and you will not go with black children. That didn't change till 1968. So these folks, look at, they have Jerry Jones, Dallas Cowboys owner, in a picture. They got him, was it the Arkansas 9?
Yeah.
Where he's
Little Rock. Little Rock.
Little Rock. Little Rock. I've been to Little Rock a few times. I know a lady down here, a good friend of mine, helped her move here from Little Rock. Little Rock 9. And Jerry Jones is in the picture. So what do we do now? Let's cancel Jerry Jones? Although I never really been a big fan of Jerry Jones per se. But Jerry Jones was just doing what they was doing back then. He was being a redneck. He was like, hey, no niggas. Keep them out of here. We don't want to integrate. That's what they were doing. So all I'm saying is I'm dealing with their offspring and their cousins out here and their sons or whoever. And we are having serious dialogue, kind of on the informal side. I'm not sitting up here having a forum. Hey, guys, let's talk about racism. No, but on the slick, I calculate very strategically. And to this day, this redneck who was a policeman in them Klansmen days who sits and guards, oh, man.
You all right, Brother Mashinda? Something happened. Something technical happened, probably. But Professor Ra?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a difference between prejudice and racism. You know, a lot of us run across some white folks that are prejudiced, but they're not in position to affect our lives, to punish us as a whole. Like Mashinda said, there were laws that up to 1968 that said black people couldn't go to school with white. That affect all black. Racism is a system that affects all black. Prejudice is personal. So you can have a white person that's prejudiced do something nice. You can have a white person that's prejudiced can do something wrong too. But when you begin to, the ways in which whites support racism and then act like they're not prejudiced. They get along with blacks and marry blacks, but at the same time, they benefit from the racist system. And they get white privilege from the system and the institution. They get protection. What they be talking about, our security and our safety. And so all of that is very critical. But when we come to our relationship, we must do a better job in maturing our children at an earlier age by mentoring our own brothers and sisters, nieces and nephews, grandchildren and children, to values and ethics that could produce better relationships. I had a meeting with my grandchildren on Native American Appreciation Day. They came by. And I sent them all out. There was about six or seven of them. They're young, real young, in elementary school. I said, there's no reason you can't be a straight A student. You gotta want to be. I said, if there's, you gotta be aware of street drugs. I said, if you're at school and you got a headache, don't take medicine or aspirin or anything from another student. Well, why? I said, well, there's a drug out there called fentanyl. They look like Skittles. And there's a pipe out there that have flavors in it, but you be smoking. And it can have effect on you. And it can drive you into habits, and it's gonna also kill you. And they look and say, okay, I say now, you want to be rewarded for good things. You want to want people to know you for being excellent, not for being bad, being the clown of the class, being the one with all the answers in the class. But some of your answers may be wrong. You may think you're right, but you'd be wrong. But what you want to do is make sure that you learn how to make decisions. And as young people, I say, learn how to take care of your. When we was coming up, I gave him this example. We used to have bazooka bubble gum with baseball cards on it. We'd eat the bubble gum and throw the cards away. Now there are people collecting those same cards that we used to get in the 50s. And they were millions of dollars. They used to give football card, baseball card. But if we would have took care of them. But we didn't have parents that tell us to take care of our stuff. I remember I bought my kids that Texas Instrument. And they gave them away. But we kept it. Just the games to Texas Instrument. It gets you hundreds of thousands of dollars from collecting. We had one of the first Apple computers. The old dual drive. Take care of things. Put them back in the box. Preserve, and keep it neat. You never know when it becomes antique and become valuable. Some, all the dolls you get. They're doll collectors for the girl. So we have to spend more. I'm not saying everybody should do what I do or anything, but if you have other ideas of how to incorporate, and even when you have personal relationships, you got to be able to talk about something other than sports or the gossip in the neighborhood or among family members. You got to sit down and plan and talk about things that bother you. You got to have some uncomfortable conversations with each other. And only when you can, if you get ready to talk and say, I don't feel like talking, okay. But when they do feel like talking, if they ever do, or if you got to find another way to communicate, they don't want to talk, okay, I'll write it out. Hopefully they'll read it, But effective communications, as Linda brought out, is very important. Second, health. And sister, make it happen. You're on top of this with wellness, sister wellness. Health should be starting at with infants. And that should be a priority in the home and in the day-to-day life. Because if you appreciate your life, you appreciate other people's life. If you take care of your man, that cat came up to me and said, like the old man told the young boy, 25, and said, man, you don't know what's happening, man. You don't know where we're going. Old man said, man, I'm 75. I've been 25. You ain't never been 75. You understand? And so I was 25. Two times 25 years. So, but I'm not 25, 75 years to just sit and drink or use drugs and still using them. But I educated myself, and I just want to give you some advice from an elder, an effective elder. We got elders out there you can't listen to, man. The whole purpose of getting old is to help the young. Don't make the mistakes. All of us do. I know I confess that, always be you. Don't let people change you. And to not doing what you could do to make things better by sitting on the sidelines and letting other people run things. And you're not reading the signs that these people are leading you off a cliff. And you just say, well, they're young, let them go, let them go, let them go. No, you got to step in. Not hard, but with education. And you got to be able to say, well, I can't follow that. We shouldn't do that. And here's why. I mean, so many people won't say no to people. Your kids, I don't McDonald's. No. You got to start eating healthy. I'm going to tell you why. People get stomach cancer, people get kidney failure, people get all kind of strokes and things from too much salt and sugar. That's the number one drug in America, salt and sugar. It's an addiction. That's why you have so many fast food places. And the obesity. Staying in physical shape is very important. But we weren't told that, we weren't taught. And we have to begin to let the kids do the homework on health, do the homework on life, in order to foster better relationships, in my opinion. Anybody want to respond to what I just said?
Well, Brother Mashinda said he wasn't finished. He had technical difficulties.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Let him go ahead.
No, I was just listening to what you said. Sorry about that. My phone actually went dead. But I agree with what you're saying right now. Those conversations, those hard conversations, and all I was talking about was just basically opening up communication, not dwelling on the rednecks per se, but on that level, which is basically, like I say, establishing a dialogue just to see what's on their mind, and see what's going on, and that's just me naturally inquisitive about, like, hey, what's wrong with y'all, that kind of thing. And so I've seen some growth in those conversations. Now, do they want to change? There's a, like I think Rasa Key is pointing out, there's a system in place that they have been in, adhering to for a long time. A lot of them just raised that way. There's an old saying down here, and I'm sure it's all over, that only way you're gonna get rid of these racist rednecks, they have to die off, because it was a time where you wouldn't see white people in the black neighborhoods down here. Now you see white girls, in the neighborhood, white dudes in the neighborhoods, and blacks live around whites and whites live around some blacks. They've had white flight out here though, just like in Compton. When we moved to Compton, it was blacks, and then the whites, they didn't want, they moved out. It was before the crime rate went up. It just don't want to live around you. That's the bottom line. The crime rate was, we were riding our bicycles all everywhere and having a good time at a young age, but they didn't want to. The only people didn't leave out was the older people, because they didn't have probably the means or wherewithal to even leave, but the other folks, the younger people, the middle age, they got out of there. So, and relating to just communicating, kind of like what you're saying, have to have that dialogue. I try to make it my business, the young brothers and sisters on the campus, that, because, our campus represents the community. It's a microcosm of the community. And so, hey, what's on your mind? You got drug dealer, you got somebody sagging their pants. They show up to the community college. You have older people, non-traditional student, different kinds. And so you learn their story. And when you learn their story, and not always due to talking, but listening, and I like to say that I'm a good, great listener. And then they start establishing trust with you, and you can have an open dialogue. So when the things are going on in the community, or before they get involved into the negative thing, you can steer people in other directions. And if everybody buys into that, that means, because I don't know everybody, but if the families, the mothers, the fathers, and everybody that buy into that, where, hey, let's keep track of what's going on, establish a dialogue, and you know, and not have a intimidation factor, you know, where people can open up and talk to you. So ask those tough questions in a very informal, at their level, wherever they're at, way, and to try to get a positive response. But it's just kind of a natural means of communicating, at least what I do on a regular basis, just to find out, you know, about others, because people are different. You have, you know, and people have learned different things, good or bad. And so, but anyway, it's a tough struggle, as you like to say, Dr. Ra. But anyway, basically, that's where I was going with that. It's just, you know, I think everybody touched on it. Communication is key, but getting into those conversations, into that dialogue, with where it could be uncomfortable again, you know. And again, I don't force myself. It's that I come in a non-threatening way, you know, not cowering down and bowing down. Don't get it twisted. But it's more or less I come, you know, non-threatening. Say hey, and when they say something, you know, I react to it, and I'll give you a case in point. You know, and I'm not naming names, but, you know, certain politicians I don't agree with, you know, black or white. I don't like their politics for certain reasons. And so I may be talking to like this little white cop, and I call him a cop. He's the security guy, used to be a cop, sitting at the table, about 70 years old. He's a redneck, raised up redneck, but he is a staunch Republican to his heart, no matter what. And what's ironic out here, they're not really Republicans. These guys, a lot of them are Democrats, but they vote Republican. That's the ironic thing, because the extreme, you know, they go into the extreme. They have a lot of extreme, because I guess, you know, back in the Dixiecrat days, the Democrats, that type of thing, they were all Democrats, and of course Republicans, the Lincolns, and you know, freed the slaves, so whatever, and all of that. So the blacks were Republicans first, and it switched. So these are some yellow dog Democrats. They'll vote for a yellow dog before they vote for a Republican. You know, it's documented. However, a lot of them do that to a certain degree, but some of them don't. They'll go with the Republican. There's a senator, John Kennedy is his name. He has a commercial. I don't know if it played in California, but he's running out here. He's running for U.S. He's the current senator, one of the senators. And he says that they were talking about defunding the police. They would say, and then so he used that in his slogan. He said, you know, you're talking about you want to defund the police. Next time you need a policeman, call a crackhead. Well, we know what that was a code for, you know, call a crackhead, you know, he's throwing codes out there and appealing to a mass of people out here who share the same ideology that he has. And so this is the U.S. senator that's provoking this thought and putting it, you know, and keeping it going. So, oh, he's a redneck to his heart. So he's going to win. He's going to win, because you can vote all day, but they have the majority. But in the state, you know, if people mobilize or whatever, you'll get closer. But in sheer numbers, they will vote for this guy. And so what I'm saying is, you have people like that who are perpetuating these poor whites. They poured in at most blacks, these poor whites in this town and around. And they letting somebody like that keep their mind spinning instead of really looking at it for what it is. He's the one that's going to cut their welfare. They depend on it more than we do, but they'll take a hit, a loss, before they promote us. And that is a deep rooted issue. That's why it's a very tough nut to crack, because it's embedded in their being. And can people change? Yeah, I believe people can change. I've seen some small changes in just in my conversations and in what in my experiences. But applying that to our youth, our Black youth who are out there in this town, we've had 11 murders in the last year in this little bitty town. Okay, what is it all about? Well, social media, but it's happening all over the country. But unless you get on that internet and do research and find out what they're doing in Jacksonville, Florida, or go down in Atlanta, what they're doing, or in Houston, or in New Orleans, or wherever, that's what Brother Quabba now, he's got his ear to the ground. So everything he was talking about, I'm dead on it. I'm listening. So he's trying to crack that nut. He's trying to break into that communication. And he's very passionate about it, and I respect him about that. You know, and I think in a previous podcast, you know, I was kind of, I wasn't going against what he was saying because he brought up C. Dolores Tucker, and I remembered her back in the day, and stuff. And so I was thinking about how we, you know, okay, if we're trying to reach out to these folks, these youth, and trying to bring them in and get them to hear what we're saying, you know, I can't go in there calling them a name, you know. And he said we can't call him Kanye West no more, you know. I get it though. It's not that he's in the name calling, but you know, there's a lot of poisonous that's going down, and so he's in the trenches with it. So anyway, so the bottom line is you got to get in there. So it's just how deep you want to go in there, and you know, or you know, you got to pick your battles, pick your fights, and do all you can, and that's all we can do. But anyway, I'm done. I just wanted to piggyback off of what everybody was talking about and share some of my thoughts.
We're good, brother. We appreciate it. Appreciate it. Good. Any other closing comments? Linda?
Excuse me, sir. I did find that Black Aviation thing. If y'all wanted me to share it, they're called the Fly Compton Foundation. That's what it's called.
Okay.
If you're interested in that, I can share that on my screen. There it is. And they're, an aeronautical museum, and they have all kinds of resources. They look like they have a lot of good stuff that definitely need to be sharing in the community, in terms of just opportunities that they had. So I went through the website. I saw some interesting things, some about their programs and what they're doing. So if you're interested, check it out. They seem to have a lot of things going on over there.
And what's the website again?
It's called Fly Compton Foundation. And this is the team. I think these are Compton kids. But anyway, they're trying to do some good work in the community. And we need to rally around these folks as much as we can. Because if we think about the pandemic when they were shutting down people getting around flying, you need a pilot in the back of your pocket to help you get away if you need to get around. So anyway, just share that. End it on a good note and hope everybody have a good evening. Peace and blessings.
All right. Linda, anything?
No, I'm just concurring everything she said in peace and blessings.
All right. What about you, Roski? Next week?
Next week, you want me to? I'll let me go
What's
to.
your program? We just Wednesday.
Let's
Who
go
we
to.
have Wednesday?
We have a brother Doc. I'm gonna show go to the website. So we have Doc Zach Master Barber, the Power of Networking. He's a brother from the Nation of Islam.
Okay.
That's gonna
And
be well, okay.
yeah, okay. Just remember, the primary thing is you start with yourself. You have a good relationship with you. You know, are you happy with who you are and how you're living? And We all are educators by profession or just by being who you are. Kids watch you. They imitate you. They listen. And they repeat what you say. If we're going to improve relationships, we must deal with shaping attitude. You can control behavior, but you can't control a person's attitude. You can make kids wash dishes, but you can't make them like washing. They got to learn to do that. You understand? With math, you make them do their math. But in order for them to be efficient, they got to learn to like doing math. Because it's a never-ending story. We want peace. We got to teach the young people to want peace amongst ourselves. Dealing with the mental illnesses and homelessness that we're facing now, it has a drastic effect on the Black community. And so teaching kids maturity and to, as Mashinda was saying, one time we was talking about, you know, don't give up on yourself and don't be afraid to have a vision for the future. You know, the whole purpose of young is to prepare you to be old. And some of us are fortunate to get a good job, we got retirement, got health insurance, and may not be multimillionaires, but we got the basics covered. And, you know, and you always want your children to go further than you. And not just be comfortable, but be able to be in position to help others and pull others up. So we'll talk some more about this, how to improve our relationships with ourselves and with our people. I'll call you in the morning, Rasha K. Bobby, whoever's next. All right.
Got it.
All right, then, y'all. Each one teach one, as Rasha T say. This is a beautiful platform. And Sister Make It Happen, if you want to take a Monday and go over some issues that you think we can learn from as a people, just let Rasha T know, and, you know, we'll support you on a Monday.
Yes, sir.
All right, then. And you too, Mashinda. That Invitations is always out. If you have somebody in Louisiana you want us to interview, let us know.
Right on.
Oh, Rasha K., when is our anniversary?
Oh, anniversary is on the 14th. The 14th of December. And I think I have a guest. So the 14th of December.
All right. And what anniversary is that?
Second. 2 years.
2 year. Our 2 year anniversary. All right, bro. Okay. Everyone, have a good night. I'll get back to you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Professor Ra. And everybody else.
Peace.